I hope all the children of Dalmo own the best. I'm going to be the green chair for a minute, for a few minutes, and I'm going to ruin their Christmas with Daniel. This is something, it's probably a song really, but I don't have a tune, so I won't sing it, so I'll just say it. Santa, please stop here. Santa, please stop here. Santa, please stop here. You keep coming around at this time of year. Santa, please stop here, because our faith is blind. We'll be waiting for you with our open minds. You keep coming around, poking around my tree, sneaking into houses where you shouldn't be. Don't you know it's wrong, that it can't be right, leaving out those presents every Christmas night? You've been messing up since the time you began living off bad beer in an out-of-date can. Won't you stop pretending it's okay this time? There's just no way out of this perfect time. Hanging around our bedrooms in the dingy gloom, watching elbows moving, making sleeping room, poking in your nose and others' lives, sniffing in their wardrobes, checking out their wives, watching children's prayers. Gee, how quaint is that? And you leave the sniggers, they ask for cash. I could be you, Santa. I could do that gig. I could see those people, watch the way they live, and those hard little cases where the mood looks great, you just swish right in with your bag and sleigh. But it makes you feel almost 10 foot tall when some poor sick kid gets to know you called. It's a broken home here that you delivered. You feel warm inside like you live forever. That's the way you work. How you feel superior when you hear hard cases from the world's interior. Because I'm just like you, when your social partners getting empty toys off the lives of others. Have you ever wondered how it's going to end for a three-time loser without one close friend? We should tell the children that it's all a lie. You're a sham imposter, but you never die. We should lock our houses till we just stop trying. We should close the doors till you get the score. Santa, please stop here. Santa, please stop here. Santa, please stop coming. Santa, please stop coming.
Thank you. No more presents. No more presents. Next up, Joe Sweeney.
What exactly is a haiku? Must it have exactly 78 syllables? A rigid 5-7-5 formation, a battle plan? Like a football team 4-2-5 or 4-3-4? Some people take a rigid approach. They want the traditional haiku to remain untouched, like an ancient Japanese temple whose stones are sacred. They feel that if we let the rules slip, the whole thing might come tumbling down like the walls of Jericho. They fear any concession could be the thin end of the wedge. People could quickly lose a run of themselves, start putting in as many syllables as they like. The haiku is being cheapened. People are sending haikus by email all over the world. It's like a disease, the E. coli virus. They are making biscuits and cakes somewhere in Japan, I suspect, with haikus written on them. There are haiku competitions, and thousands enter, all desperate for recognition, for the kudos that goes with these Japanese poems. Traditionalists believe you should stick to the theme of nature. Others favor diversity. They want innovation. They want new coups. Not just haikus, but low coups and medium coups. They feel the haiku should be able to deal with a variety of themes. For themes like love, for instance, you would have woo coups. Haikus dealing with grief or sorrow, boo hoo coups. Thinking of catchy coups, cunning coups. There are haiku workshops, literary cookery classes. And which people learn about the ingredients of the form and how to cook them. You have apple coos and orange coos, like rice you could have boiled coos or fried coos, crispy coos, baked coos, half-baked coos. Coos about birds, of course, pigeons, cooing coos, or cuckoo coos. Ones about felines, catty coos, and kitty coos. Philosophical themes could be addressed. Why coos? Who coos? What is it all about, coos? There really is no limit. Why not have coos with whatever number of syllables you want? Now that would be a coo. That the purists would rue. They would think it needed
are beautiful nor true.
The problem is that some people, through laxity and lack of effort, want the haiku to bend to their whim, to laze out, to break its banks and smelt the surrounding countryside. They say traditional practitioners are too rigid, living in the past, in their own cocoon. The traditionalists say that these new haiku enthusiasts don't have a clue what a haiku is, and they just poo-poo their efforts. Well, oh, the haiku, it could become a world beater. Businesses should proclaim themselves not, for example, as Donnellys and Co., but Donnellys and Co. The possibilities are endless. This is what brings me to my ultimate proposal, my vision for the future. We already have cuckoo clocks. Why couldn't we have haiku clocks with a haiku written on the face? We could start a society of collectors of these miniature clocks and call ourselves the Ku Klux Klan. The clan would comprise of lovers of the haiku, committed practitioners who would only communicate with one another in formal sentences of exactly 17 syllables. They would only speak in haikus. All speech at dinners and outings and AGMs would be within the required form. There would be punishments for those who did not measure up to the exacting Japanese requirements. They would be thrown out of the Ku Klux Klan, condemned to writing long, rambling compositions. Society rules would be strict, roll calls would be kept at each meeting, anyone absent on 17 occasions in any one year would be reprimanded. Anyone who failed to stick to the rules of the form would be taken in hand by the other members of the society and brought before the Lord High Executioner, who would excommunicate him and her or her forever from the society. And they could go off and write sonnets and sestinas, odes and elegies, blank verse, reverse, prose, poems, whatever they wanted, but would never darken again the doorway of the coup.
Thank you, Joe. And I actually have it on arrival information that the inventor of the haiku is in this room. And I'm not going to say who. Right, is Adam Wyeth gone? Adam Wyeth is gone. Okay. And next up, we have Niall Herriot.
I presented this to you a few weeks ago, but I've just improved it a bit, maybe. I'm afraid it's a bit of doggerel. I apologize for the cliches in it, but not for the polemical aspects. IMF'd or IMF-off? Lines written at a time when we were hoping that the victory in the Rugby World Cup would bring the spirits of this bewildered downtrodden nation of ours. This is the worst day in Irish history, declared George Hook on the telly. No, George, that was in Black 47. Or the day when each one of us could ruefully say, well, would you believe it? I am effed. Please, poor old Mother Ireland, please. You're being screwed. Get up off your knees. What about following Iceland's policy? We should say, get lost, IMF, ECB, instead of just IMF. This bailout is really for the dodgy elite, while our youngsters are voting with their feet. The whole idea is that speculators regain virtual reality billions poured in my brain. Let's stop saying IMF. Instead, let's believe we can be our own bosses. Roll back while we can, cut our losses. Our fine food will always be in demand, and our vast energy potential on sea or land. Say no to the ECB and IMF. Thanks to the loan, boys, but no thanks. We can do without our useless banks. Let's have real money. Make it interest-free. Go for the full Irish, people's democracy. Mr. Inspectors, IMF off. As to the other little matter of the Rugby World Cup, sure, it's only a game, so come on, cheer up. No one died, not even Hookie of a heart attack. Our team was brilliant and the fans great crack, and Ireland is far from out.
You're here, sure is. Definitely, far from out. Thank you, Niall. Next up, our ultimate five word challenge winner of the year, Jennifer Matthews.
This one is for Julie, because she asked. So it's called Frost-Eyed Mermaid. A creature hesitates at the dark bar. A man rests his hand on her sequin scale tip, coaxing her digits and counting the taxi fare in his pocket for home delivery of this tidy gift. Teaspoons too intimate, he measures the evening in the jewel-toned aqua pops she tips, half woman, half fish. Later in the lady, she paints the receptive canvas of her skin over her eyes, imagines pools. Blue, she thinks, springs out her eyes for him. Her school flitters around her, reflected in mirrors, perfecting portraits for beholders, holding in stomachs, seasons, schools out. She swims her way through drunken shoals to him, all made up, half woman, half wish.
Thank you, Jen. And next up, could we have, please, to the microphone, Mary O'Connell.
Anything, but I had this from the slam, so it's called Moribond Species.
I was once a Celtic tigress with painted blood red claws, itching to make things happen, looking for hidden flaws. The garden had fine decking. My rooms were open plan, and we got 8 meg broadband when the whole damn thing began. I had a walk-in wardrobe, plus polished parquet floors. A woman from Slovenia helped out with all the chores. Antwerp for my diamonds, the Seychelles for my tan. At Dolce and Gabbana, my shopping spree began. Is that Harvey Nichols handbag? 2000, yes, that's true. Shoes had to be Manolo's, no other brand would do. I was not a yummy mummy. A Prius would be too twee. I preferred to burn up rubber in a spanking SUV. But then, we had the credit crunch. Big cats were under threat, and even Eddie Hobbs couldn't get me out of debt. My eldest cub has lost his stripes, bit more than he could chew. Since all his shares in free fall, there's no one left to screw. Too many hungry jackals have got us by the throat. And since now, we've lost our opt-out clause, survival seems remote.
Thank you, Mary. Mary's just come back from Derry, where she represented Munster in the All-Ireland Graduate Next up, could we please welcome a stalwart of poetry in Cork City, Mr. Patrick Cotter.
Well, as you know, dogs can be trained to smell almost anything, narcotics and explosives being some of the more common substances. In America, they've trained dogs to smell out cancer in patients before they even visit any other clinical symptom. So this poem is called The Pity of Dogs. Grass, fresh cut, is light and too sweet for a dog's nose. No depth, no resonance. So while sitting obediently in file, according to our master's wishes, we sniff the air for badger's dry turd, stirred back into odorous life by a brief summer shower, and chance upon, beyond the line of trees at the edge of this field, under a shroud of fraying leaves, a dead shrew combusting slowly in the summer heat, melding atom by rancid atom with the air and all the other smells there. The alluring mist of a bitch in heat is probably too much to hope for, but the piquancy of our master's treat cannot be concealed by the sweatiness of his palms or masked by the dry muskiness of his crotch pocket. So we sit in place, our eagerness urgent, our insides as restless as our lolling tongues. The dog next to me sharply pulls his nose left and up, and yes, now I smell it too, swallows dropping in an angled trajectory, heading to the ground, fast, fast, but slower than its scent molecules have struck my nostrils. Nothing smells new about my master, but one subtle spice he exudes grows stronger daily. I can smell your eyes, its black fluorescence spreading through his lungs. Each time I lick him now, it is with greater tenderness.
Thank you, Brad. And next up, we have Rosalind Blue. 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 Blue.
I haven't been drunk at a whale for a long time, so mind my slurry tongue. I'm going to read a poem which is quite new, and I've got to say something about the background of it. I'm hoping to be able to launch a project in connection with Triscoll, and I'm following my side as well, to make sign poetry with deaf poets. And I was envisaging sitting in a workshop, being the only one who has no sign language, being the only hearing person. Deaf culture. When I'm with you, I feel I am disabled, because my eyes cannot hear, and my hands cannot speak. It's like culture shock. I am in silence when I am with you, alone with my hearing, dependent on translation, because my gestures and movements are empty. Show me your world, release me from this silent disability, and teach my hands how to speak and my eyes to hear. Help me see your culture.
Thank you, Sue. And next up, we have Seamus Harrington.
Thanks, Paul. The Red Queen Bower. God's Gable Inn. Lump hammers and chisels ring in the moonlight. Old Norman commission removed in one chunk. Improper, Monsignor. Sheddings and lichen should never be mounted on God's Gable Inn. Lugged to the causeway while crickets are rasping, dumped in the seaway, don't utter a word. Oh no, gasped the mermaid, sheeling a gig, shiver my lumbers, who are they in this?
Thanks, Seamus. And next up, Patricia Walsh.
Thanks, Paul. This is one of the closest to a Christmassy poem that I've ever going to get. It's about Christianity. Light sets on a nighttime discussion or aided lamp cascades over water. A king was born in a war zone, and the blood of celebration congeals with six peals on the bumper. What else is born? Hope for anything that dulls the scorn of living, and panacea to cover a stain of knowledge. We go to bed in flames. Our intellect cannot discern between fire and reason. But Lord's light will shine over those whose questions tattered our stillborn robes.
Thanks, Patricia. Do we have an Anne O'Malley in the building? Anne O'Malley? It looks like Anne O'Malley. Is it Anne O'Malley? Huh? Yeah, she's gone. Simon Deasy, please.
The diary entry of a young man, December 12th, 2056. I lay naked, staring at her back. Light lay there. I wanted it not to be beautiful. I rolled away and looked up at two wine bottles, one empty, one three quarters full. And I stared again, up at the fuller one. I stared at it hard. For some time. Then the edges seemed to move, but I'm almost sure that they did not. I stared at it hard. I stared at it intently as she lay behind me, still, still like the light, lying lightly. I stared, and I stared, and I stared, and I stared up at it. And then I sat up. I lifted the bottle, and I brought it to my lip, and then I tipped it. A swell of sharp, warm Sauvignon filled my mouth and moved to my throat. No miracle.
Thank you, Simon. There are seven left on the open mic. Petter has very kindly allowed us to go a bit over, so we'll probably get everyone in. And don't forget, the after party afterwards, there's a lot of booze and wine and food available. Please join us if you'd like to. Tina Pesca, please, to the microphone.
The new poem, and I hope I remember it because I don't have any pieces of paper. And it's called Betrayal is a Little Death. If you are asleep in another woman's arms, I wouldn't want to know, couldn't want to know. Because if I did, I might stop breathing, my heart might stop beating, the sun might start shining, and the moon might fall out of the sky. If you were asleep in another woman's arms, I wouldn't want to know, couldn't want to know. The birds might stop flying and fall to the floor. The fish in the sea might start dying and wash up at our door. The mountains might crumble and the rivers run dry. If you were asleep in another woman's arms, giant flowers might bloom and bite. The universe would never be right. The clouds might rain blood and raise the dead, and babies that night would be born with two heads. If you were to wake in another woman's arms, you wouldn't want to know, couldn't want to know. As you kissed her goodbye, picture closed from the floor, inventing a lens, stepped out of her door, that the world had just come to an end.
Thank you, Tina. And next we have Julie Fields.
Mm-hmm.
been tailed. Her pale face thrown fierce shadows upon tangled lakes of lovers, neglected ambition hover and smog. Street lamps wink at stiletto silhouettes lingering on high walls, nocturnal portraits on vanished corners. Two dry eyes search for the soul of this machine space from the mouth of a bank. A numb bone pushes dead into the concrete carpet, which disconnects the worms from the birds. Lorries flash by as they chase their tails, hissing to a halt with blasphemous beeping at drunken, angry, broken clones malfunctioning at crossroads. Salty tears season chips as X tells Y sells Z of such a prick. A greasy tidal wave of abandoned paper searches the streets for trees to cling to. A dystopic scene in the dead of Saturday night unfolds. A cast of amateurs improvise their lives, satisfying the surveilling eye. No applause, no encore. The curtain drops and all appears calm for an hour or so, until alarm clocks wake the birds. The city coughs and slurps once more, it spits another day. Lost boys and girls shuffle from their feet.
Thank you, Julie. And next we have Kieran McCarter.
There is a river in morning's darkness, a black water reflecting a starless sky, and you could fall in, and that would be it, without call to reason or wonder why. End of work's long day and endless night, end of rest and end of fright. Just a simple shift of weight upon which last hopes levitate. But then man put their shoulder to the grindstone. The boat began to move. A train passed. The sun began to rise. Thank you.
Thank you, Kieran. And next, we have Rosie O'Regan.
I'm going to hold on to it because I'm not sure if I'll remember. And it's called After Too Many Poets to Name. I wanted to write poetry, thought spirit was enough, thought my thoughts were thought out, that my words bespoke me. Then I fell for a poet, fell for his quest for poets, and I listened and read and realized I was lost. It's an idea, a feeling, a full circle that I can't pin down, can't seem to find the thread, though maybe the spool is full, or maybe I misspelled it. The spoon is full, but the glass is empty. The heart, somehow obstructed, can't reel it out. The machine won't sew, and so I stop. Breathe. Doodle dark clouds over discarded words and wait. Sometimes a phrase baits me, pulls me along so that I think I'm swimming. Fishing gut hooked to my throat, a flash line of silver with each painful tug from so many boats. Their colours refracted, bounce from my scales, pool in my liquid eyes, dazzle me thrashing towards shafts of light. Beams from the world above. This death, a kind of love, comes slow or quick in a burst of brilliance. And then what? Turn clouds into caterpillars, hairy mollies. Watch them crawl all over my poem, their silken threads joining up, cocooning my words. I encourage two of them to get it on, but think, larvae can't do that, and wonder if they dream of becoming butterflies. Thank you.
Thank you, Rosie. And next we have Sue Cosgrave.
Did you?
Too late.
You don't have to go. You don't have to go.
Are you sure?
No, sure, yeah. No,
right. No, it was ordained hours ago that it wasn't going to happen. So. Unless she really wants to get up here now.
Yeah, she does.
Sorry, Sue. She's going to get me for this later. Sorry.
Oh God, so I'm asleep now. Random. It's called relative bearing, and it's relative bearing is a silly term, and it's when we sail, I think, straight into the wind. She was my correct reading. Straight into the wind. The headland blinks. We run before the wind. I watch you reef, rope kissing cleat. You unravel the hemp rope the way you unravel the day. I hold my breath, wait for the next wave. We are wayward travelers to nowhere, awash and reckless with a cold that spills to aft and astern. Your absolute bearing tells me all I need to know. Not even your hands contradict my resolve. Blinds drawn on a scuttled day, we soon anchor in the bay of Bergsea. I take a sounding. The waters are deep here, you assure me. And then, with your eyes, you show me. Those eyes of yours that now contradict absolutely everything. Thank you.
Well, you cannot have an end of year reading without a poem by Sue Cosgrave. Not art. Next up, we have Dawn Hardest.
First poem I was going to read tonight was referenced twice by Caroline. I do like it, of course.
Yeah.
It's called Aid Strathclyde and the rest of the poems. I couldn't find it, so I picked this one by John Liddy. It's called Scarecrow. It's called, it's from his collection, The Angling Cot. And Desert Grady said in his preface that good poems are poems that you like to have written yourself. Scarecrow. I have heard it. The egg crack in a wren's nest, the wind snap at the thistle tip of every sting. Once there were two spiders on a quilt of toasted leaves, each with its own blueprint for its own invisible web. One hunter I knew could kill a fox before his gun sniffed the scent. I have seen a river doll tug free from those stones, born in riverbeds, and challenge the battling course of another journey. I have cheered the walk and tumble of a foal in her mother's blood, cursed those boots that crush the ripe stalks of my pride. I am a scarecrow, nailed to old wood, eaten by worms, paralyzed by rust.